So we've begun our first full day of this retreat, a time of landing, time of arriving, a time of being, settling into where we are, and with some calmness, with some intentionality. As I mentioned yesterday evening, we won't immediately begin the formal cultivation of the metta practice this morning. We will begin that this afternoon. But I hope you understand that that doesn't imply that we somehow leave the attitude and the intentionality of metta out of our practice. Kindness, befriending, is so central to mindfulness, such a necessary companion of mindfulness. There's never too much. There is never too much. And it makes such a difference to bring this attitude of affectionate curiosity into our practice, into our ways of sitting, our ways of walking, our ways of moving through our days. So this morning is a time of returning, of beginning to integrate, to unify body, mind, and present moment. We are often such disunified human beings with our bodies in one place and our minds somewhere else, and often even our environments entirely forgotten. So, a time of integrating, unifying, collecting, calming. You know, when you look at the Satipatthana Sutta, some of the first instructions are breathing in, calming the formations, breathing out, calming the formations. And the formations are anything that is agitated. Anything that is agitated in the mind, in the body. And calming is a verb. It's a process. It's a state. It's a cultivation of a calm abiding in the midst of all things. There's a teaching from the Buddha that has been very important to me over the last 21 months, and I'm sure you've all learned this experientially in your own lives. The Buddhists really recognize that none of us are invulnerable to the world of conditions. We know this. We know this in the way that our lives had been, were, and are so radically changed by the pandemic. We are not invulnerable to the world of conditions, but we are also not helpless. We can learn a way of living in which we are not hostage to the world of conditions. How do we do that? How do we do that? Through what we cultivate. Through what we cultivate, through what we commit to, through what we develop. I'm very aware that everyone has had their own lockdown stories, and for many people, it's been a real story of loss and grief and uncertainty. And you know, there are many lessons I think that we've all learned, perhaps involuntarily, but we have learned. And I think one of the primary lessons we've learned is this movement from involuntary renunciation to voluntary renunciation. You know, involuntary renunciation is that landscape of deprivation, of feeling things have been taken away from us. It can be a landscape of resentment and ill will. And then there comes the grace of moving into voluntary renunciation. Voluntary renunciation, a willingness to yield to what is, to yield to what is. You know, in so many ways, the story of our lives over the last 21 months has really been written actually by the conditions of the pandemic. And the story of our lives has often been written by one set of conditions or another. This is not something new to us. And I think what we've perhaps learned to do is that we have the choice to write our own story within that story of conditions. It's not just about what is happening to me or what I can and can't do, what I fear, what I like and I don't like. The truth is we are always writing a story, aren't we? And we live in the story that we write. And it's really helpful to be aware of, you know, what is the story we are writing today? And what is that story being written by? By the lovely or by the unlovely? By the helpful or by the unhelpful? As we really begin this retreat today, we simplify, you know, we simplify as much as we're able to. We learn to disentangle from our habits of busyness, of doing, of preoccupations, our habits of being always on the go, you know, on the move. We learn to disentangle from some of the patterns that preoccupy us and simplify, simplify. And then there's a few really kind of core intentions that are so essential to beginning a retreat. And one of them is simplicity. Another thing in the service of that we might consider is what is essential and what is inessential. Now, what is essential and what is inessential? And when we apply this to our lives, and you know what goes on in our minds and hearts, that there is much that is inessential. You know, our speculations, our imaginings, our preoccupations, our busyness. Can we just put it down and really focus on what is essential? Being awake, developing our willingness to meet the moment just as it is. What is essential is the kindness and the affection and the tenderness that we bring to our experience, to our bodies, to our minds, to the moment that we are in. What is essential is committing ourselves to wakefulness. It's so easy to move through life in something of a dream, you know, disconnected from the body, disconnected from the world around us, hardly being touched. And we have this opportunity in these few days to really treasure and to honor the essential, the essential. So this morning will be a time of calming, of gathering, of arriving, of settling, beginning to slow down, beginning to appreciate. In the service of that, it's really helpful to find an anchor where you can establish mindfulness in the body, whether it's the places where your body touches the ground, if it is your breathing, but remembering that mindfulness is never a defensive process. It's not about shutting out the world. There will be many moments where your attention is drawn away from your chosen anchor. You pause, you know, and then you're able to return and to reset that intention to be present, to establish mindfulness in the body, to listen inwardly. So let's begin by finding a posture that feels supportive. As much as possible, having a sense of uprightness in your back and neck. This is such a reminder, a powerful reminder to be awake, to be here. as you settle into your posture, into the body, as you settle into this moment, in a felt sense of your body sitting, a felt sense of all of those sitting around you, the collective intentionality. A felt sense of your body sensing the landscape of sensations, some that are lovely, some that are unpleasant, some that are neither, the arising, the passing, the changing nature of the body. Felt sense of the body listening, receptive to the quietude, the sounds, a felt sense of the body breathing, sensing this from within, the rising and falling, the trunk of the body, with the in-breath and the out-breath. The coolness of the in-breath touching the upper lip, the nostrils. The warmth of the out-breath leaving the body. Just knowing the breathing as it is, whether it's shallow or deep. Inhabiting the body with kindness, with curiosity, with the intention to gather, to collect, to integrate body, mind, present moment. Sensitive to the moments when your attention is drawn away from the breath, the body, to a thought, sound, an image, a memory. Pausing for a moment, a simple knowing of where you are. And then a gentle returning to your chosen anchor, resetting the intention to integrate, to unify, to direct mindfulness, to sustain mindfulness, and to appreciate a sense of collectedness, gatheredness. In any moments, we become lost, forgetful, being able to remember. The body is here. The body we can return to. Reestablishing intention. Reestablishing wakefulness. Reestablishing our intention to cultivate calm abiding in the midst of all things. in the last few minutes of the sitting, simply being as wholeheartedly present as you're able to be in this body, however it is, in this moment, however it is. And as you listen to the sound of the bell, just emerging from the sitting period to a wider field of awareness. So because this is our first full day of arriving, we are not planning to have group meetings today. We will begin those tomorrow, but there will be a period this afternoon at 4:45 for some questions and answers, reflections, which of course will be optional. If you prefer to walk, then it is fine to do that. The Buddha speaks about establishing mindfulness in four postures: sitting, standing, walking, lying down, saying this is a most noble way of being in this world. I think there is a fifth posture, which some teachers refer to as the in-between moments, you know, where we're washing dishes or eating or transitioning from one place to another, going to bed, going to rest, getting up. And what is really being pointed to is this dedication to wakefulness, stepping out of the world of habit, stepping out of the world of repetitive patterns, stepping into a world of wakefulness, appreciation. I have a sense from what I see that it's a rather lovely day there today, which enables you to be outside, to walk, which is actually really quite wonderful in that environment, and I highly recommend it. I think what is important in the walking practice, though, is to have a path. You know, there are times to go for longer walks during, you know, meal times, but during the walking periods, it is helpful to actually have a path that has a beginning and it has an ending. It doesn't have to be a very long path. One of my first teachers once said that to develop this practice, we should find a secluded place with long views. And I think where you are certainly fits that description. So to have a path When you, you know, the walking meditation doesn't begin when you arrive at your path. It begins when you begin to move out of your sitting posture. That is the beginning of the walking period. So the bell doesn't really signal the end of a meditation. It simply signals a change in posture. So find a path. It doesn't have to be a perfect path, and you may have lots of thoughts about thinking, you know, that path over there might be a lot better than this path that I'm on. Have a path and actually return to it. Return to it so that every time you go into a walking period, you're not having to go through that whole narrative about where should I walk today? You know, where should I walk during this walk during this period? And establish a path, in a sense, befriend it, commit to it. When you arrive at your path, be still for a moment. Stand still. Listen inwardly. Have a sense of arriving in the body touching the ground. Having a bigger, more spatial sense of the world around you, the loveliness of the colors, the light, appreciating. And then just as we do in the sitting, gathering and collecting your attention and establishing an anchor. Now, I think there are two things to consider in the walking practice. One is pace, how quickly, how slowly, and the other is focus. Now, these are actually changing, you know? And I think both our pace and our focus needs to be somewhat responsive to actually the mind state of the moment. You know, if the mind feels very, very dull, very foggy, it's actually better to walk a little bit more quickly, slightly below our normal pace. But, you know, if you're walking very, very slowly and you're sleepy, you can actually walk yourself into a trance. You know, so having your pace slightly quicker, not in a hurry, not in a rush. If the mind feels quite dull or sleepy, it's also better, more helpful to have a bigger focus, perhaps the whole sense of the body in movement. If the mind feels quite busy, quite agitated, even though it feels counterintuitive, it's actually more helpful to slow down, to really bring the mind into the body by slowing down. There's almost an invitation to the mind to settle into this body and to have a more precise focus. You know, your feet touching the ground, your feet lifting, moving, placing. Now, being aware, of course, that your state of mind can change a number of times in a single walking. And I think there's a real invitation to be attuned to that, you know, so that the walking practice doesn't become yet another habit, you know, a meditation habit. This is how I walk. Am I listening inwardly? Am I responding to what is present inwardly in the walking practice and appreciating what an ally the body is in this life? And in this practice, as a place of grounding, a place of connecting, a place of gathering and collecting ourselves to be here, to be here, to be awake. Just as in the sitting, you will find in the walking practice, there will be many moments when your attention is drawn elsewhere. To a sight or a sound or a thought. Again, this is not a mistake. It is simply life speaking to you. Something else has become more predominant. And we're not kind of trying to shut out the world, but we are endeavoring not to be lost. So when your attention is drawn elsewhere, again, to pause, sometimes it's even helpful to stop for a moment in the walking practice. To know where you are, to come back, to reset the intention, to take the next step. It's really helpful to not just begin the walking period And certainly not to regard walking meditation as somehow the poor cousin of sitting. If I can give you a little temptation towards the walking practice, most people report to me that most of their insights actually come to them in walking meditation, much more so than in sitting. So not to treat the walking practice as somehow being the poor cousin of sitting. This, we know we spend much of our lives in movement, in the body, interfacing with the world. And we all know what a challenge it is in that interface to be present and to be grounded. And this is really our opportunity to learn those lessons. So I wish you a lovely walking. And then we'll be returning for a sitting period. Enjoy.